Welcome to episode 17 of the Super Podcast. I'm your host, Super Marcy. Okay, so I'm here with three guys. Go me. So today's topic is top five horror of the decade. And the decade would be from 99 to 2009. And I'm welcoming back the terrible Australian, Terra Yo. Australis. That's what
thank
I like
very,
to call you.
Thank you very much for that introduction, Marcy.
I do remember calling you a terrible Australian on an earlier show.
Although, like I said, after all the some of the bad movies I've seen lately, yes, I am in a terrible,
you're
a terrible
you're
Australian.
Terrible, 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 terrible.
Yes.
But welcome back to our awesome country as you've been away.
Yes, thank you very much. Been away for about 5 weeks, so it's just good to be back home and to be chatting with everybody.
Especially me.
Well, yeah, well, yes. I'm kidding, yeah.
Yes, and I'm welcoming back Pat, who was joined me, I can't remember when it was. It wasn't too long ago. I think it was around Halloween.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and I think we did, we just had a general discussion and we did top five, was it kills from A Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th, and that was a lot of fun.
Oh, yes, it was.
That was cool. And we have someone new, and this marks the first time I've actually had an American on the Super Podcast, so it's lost its virginity with that. So, welcome, AJ.
How's it going, Marcy?
I'm going well. Or I could call you Mad Movie Man, like your Twitter name.
What's that?
I said I could call you Mad Movie Man, like on Twitter.
You could.
Yeah, that sounds like a creepy sort of name. Not really.
I'm the king of all schmoes, baby. That's who I am.
Alrighty. So
just don't tell Jobo that.
Yeah, well, obviously, that's how we all know each other, from the website, because we all frequent the website. So we could get straight into our top five. So what I'll do is, well, obviously we'll start with number five, and I'll pass it off to the terrible Australian for his number five.
Yes, because I'm awesome. just kidding. Okay, my number five of the decade is a horror film that came out in 2007. I shouldn't call it a horror film because it's two horror films in one, and that is Grindhouse.
Now, did you see it in the original format like that?
Yeah, I saw it in the original format.
So did you go to like a special screening or something that they had here, like twice or something?
Yes, I saw it by magic.
Just say yes.
Yes.
Gotta learn to say the right words.
Yeah, I said, like, I saw it by magic.
Yeah.
Which you can interpret that as you will.
Exactly.
Filthy commie pirate.
He's not a pirate.
Well, they deprived it of us from in Australia.
Yeah, well, they had special screenings of it.
Yeah. Well, I would have loved to have seen it, like, because I know they had special screenings for the movie, like, way, like, about a year and a half after the movie came out, but
yeah.
I was so pumped to see the movie. One of my most anticipated the movies, and then they were supposed to come out the same weekend that it was in the US, and then
and
they decided to, 2 weeks beforehand, pushed it back by a month.
Yeah.
And then
they split them.
Yeah, and pretty much when the movie didn't do that well at the box office, they pretty much took it off the schedule completely and just decided to just release Death Proof only in cinema.
Yeah.
And also release Planet Terror straight to DVD.
Yep.
So I had to find other ways of seeing it, which I will not mention on here. But Well, they drove me to it.
Well, they forced your hand, basically.
Yes, they forced my, they had to force me to do things that I'm not proud of.
Mm.
And I don't regret it.
Well, I haven't seen it like that. I've seen them individually. So, and I've seen the trailers on YouTube.
I was fortunate enough to actually catch this in the theater, and like halfway through, or like not even halfway through, probably like two-eighths through into Planet Terror, like I had to go to the bathroom, and I knew I couldn't last the whole time, but luckily, like I had seen the Thanksgiving trailer on Joe Blow before, so I took that time to just speed my ass to the bathroom and run back just in time.
And
for the Death Proof, how goddamn boring that was. I hate Death Proof.
Really?
As Kevin Spacey would say, "Rah!"
No,
it was just so boring. Like Planet Terror just jazzed me up so much, and like, yeah, Death Proof, wonder how this is going to be. The gnome would shut up. Nobody.
You need to see it again.
I like Death Proof.
You need to be seen at least a couple of times.
I like Death Proof more on my second viewing.
Mm.
I liked it a lot more when I watched it again.
You know, it's weird, though, because I actually read both scripts before I actually saw the movie. And interesting enough, like, I didn't think much of the script when I read it.
Mm.
Like, but I read it, I thought, oh, it's all right, but it's too long. And you think the movie itself is long. You just wait till you read the script. But but I saw the movie, and I actually loved the movie much more than I did the script. But I did definitely enjoy it. It's definitely, like, definitely Death Proof is definitely like his least movie, but at the same time, it's like all of his movies, it's more watchable the more times you see it.
It's like his movies, it's dialogue driven.
Yeah.
But I loved Stuntman Mike. But
he was a great character.
But then again, this is Kurt Russell, and I have a sick fetish for Kurt Russell, so we'll just leave it at that.
It's not the beard. It's not the beard.
He didn't have a beard in it, but
he had a scar.
He just looked cool.
Yeah, he was really cool.
Yeah. I know you guys are going to hate me for this, and I know like everyone who's listening to this is going to hate me for this. I actually haven't seen Grindhouse, because it's funny, because I was on placement for my college program at the time that it was released, and I had no money, and everyone in the office where I was working was saying all these, you know, like, oh, you know, Planet Terror is awesome. It's like Death Proof is like boring, you know, basically what just AJ was saying. And I couldn't go see it. I was like, ugh. So I still haven't seen it because I'm still dirt poor.
Yeah.
Actually, do you know what was really, really stupid? And this just happened like last week or so. Speaking of Australian DVD releases and how really silly they are, I saw this set that said Grindhouse, 4-disc edition in this really cool box. And I'm like, oh, they released it as Grindhouse. I look on the back. No, it's just the two movies, individual 2-disc sets, just in a new packaging.
Yeah, I saw that too.
And I was like, fuck you, bitches.
Yeah, it pissed me off as well. But Planet Terror was a lot of fun. Like, I'd say I've seen Planet Terror more than Death Proof, even though I kind of like Death Proof much more as a film. But
I've seen them as the same, I think, for me.
But Planet Terror is definitely the funner of the two. And I just love everything about this film. I love the trailers.
Yeah.
My favorite trailer would be Thanksgiving, but I do have a soft spot for Werewolf Women of the SS only because of a certain cameo in that trailer.
Which one?
Bill Murray?
There was a few.
Nicolas Cage.
Oh, I was going to say anything because I thought I didn't want to spoil it for Pat, but since you already know, Pat.
Well, I've seen the trailer for it, and I'm like, and Nicolas Cage, Fu Manchu, I'm like, oh.
And he's like, this is my mecca! Ah!
Yeah.
Up to that point, it was probably the best performance he's given in years.
Probably. I actually have seen the trailer for Machete, and I like, and not just because I love
Danny Pedro.
Yeah, Thank you.
I forgot his name too.
I couldn't help. But Danny Trejo is just so much fun watching, even though he plays like a bad guy for a lot of his roles, but he's still so much fun, and he's such a nice guy.
They call him Machete.
And now
Danny Trejo's made a career out of playing the one guy in prison you don't want to be bunkmates with.
They just fucked with the wrong Mexican.
Are you guys looking forward to seeing, like, the full-length movie?
Yeah, that'll be awesome.
I mean, they've got, like, Steven Seagal, who looks terrible at the moment, but... and Jessica Alba, and... Who else was in
that? Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, Lindsay Lohan.
Don Johnson.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, who isn't in this movie?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how it's going to turn out. We've lost someone, but he'll be back, so...
All right, I'm going to lay a question out
for
everyone, but I might wait till that person...
Basically, what I'll do is I'll just edit this out, like I'll pause it.
If I can
get my stupid audacity. It keeps disappearing on my screen. I'm just new.
Okay, which are you guys looking more forward to, Machete or The Expendables?
I'd say Machete at this point.
Expendables.
I would say Machete.
The Australians are going for Expendables.
Because we want our sly picks.
I want Stallone. I want to see Dolph Lundgren versus Jet Li. And I want to see, like, Stone Cold and Eric Roberts.
I just want to see for that one scene, and if it only goes for 5 minutes, of like Stallone, Willis, and Arnold Schwarzenegger in the one scene together.
Yeah, I don't know how I'm going to handle seeing this movie, because I'm just going to be like constantly having, maybe I shouldn't say the word.
I'm going to have an orgasm in the cinema.
Yeah, I'm just going to be having multiple orgasms, like just walking in to see this movie.
One for the Expendables.
As an aside, do you guys know that Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren are starring in a sort of, I don't want to say a reboot, but of the Universal Soldier series? It's a direct-to-DVD thing.
Believe me, I know all about it. Yeah.
Universal Soldier Regeneration.
I know all about it. It looks like, I mean, it's probably going to be pretty shit, but I'm probably going to enjoy the shit out of it because it's Van Damme and Lundgren in a Universal Soldier movie again.
I just think it's funny because Jean-Claude pretty much said after when he made JCVD, which is a pretty damn good film, that he was only going to do quality movies from now on?
Apparently, which is like one of the reasons I think he turned down The Expendables. And he, like, started his own production company and he's made a few movies there.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. As much as I love Van Damme, sometimes I don't get him. But, yeah. Anyway.
Well, yeah. I know that feeling. I mean, like, you look at all of his movies and it's like, this guy really likes to get naked in his own movies. And I'm like, what the hell?
That's for the female audience.
He'll always be Guile to me. He'll always be Guile.
I'm going to kick that son of a bitch Bison's ass so hard
that the of next course.
Bison wannabe is going to feel it.
Who wants to fall and who wants to stay with me?
We go way off topic.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're going to move to Pat for his number 5 horror of the decade.
Okay. Now before I say my selection, I just got to say that these type of lists are the hardest ones for me because it's like you're taking a decade and you're trying to pick like the top 5 and it's just so friggin' hard. But I mean, like everyone can say the same thing about that. It's like, oh, it's friggin' hard.
That's why I both like and hate lists, because I hate making them because I know I'm gonna leave stuff off, but it's a challenge to just limit it to that 5. So give us your number 5.
Yeah, well, it's probably a good thing that you had stated that this was going to be from 99 to 09, because this film was released in 99.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that that it hasn't gotten the sequel that it really deserved, but it's The Blair Witch Project. And I remember seeing this on video for the first time because I wasn't old enough initially to see it in theaters, but once I did see it, holy crap, I was scared to death. And to make matters worse, I saw it at camp out in the woods, and I'm like, I am not going to sleep tonight. And I mean, it's just like all these other, you know, films that people have jumped on the bandwagon with, you know, like Hostel and all the torture porn sort of thing. And I remember that you see the influx of all this like shake cam sort of Blair Witch style thing. I mean, it's been done to death. And the sequel, unfortunately, it was a case of the studio wanting to basically make money now, screw the plot, screw the movie itself. And Book of Shadows, while it's okay, it just didn't do it for me. And you could tell that it was just done on the TV first.
Well, I actually...
I'm back.
Yeah, we know. I don't know how much you missed out on, but we're just talking about the Blair Witch Project. And he's gone again. Oh, well.
Yeah.
We'll get him back. But there's not much I can say about the Blair Witch Project because I just talked about it on my last podcast because it was about films of 99, but I saw it on my birthday at the cinema. And, I mean, I liked the movie. It didn't really scare me, but I thought the ending was pretty scary.
That is a creepy ending.
Yeah, the ending is creepy, but the chicken, it pissed me off, and I just wanted her to die straight away. Yeah.
The idea behind the Blair Witch Project, you have to remember that it's in context, and
yeah.
It probably doesn't hold up as well as it did back then, but you have to remember, this was like right when the internet was
just taking off.
People didn't realize that the film itself was like a film and not, you know, like based on actual events or, you know, this footage we recovered in the woods and stuff like that. People didn't clue in.
Yeah, this was a perfect example of excellent marketing because they made it for fuck all and it made so much money and people thought it was real.
Exactly. And again, that was probably due to the fact that the internet was in its infancy and people, you know, didn't have that sort of know how to go around and say, dude, this movie, it's not real.
Yeah, there was no like jump on Google and go on Wikipedia. But it was so funny that everyone thought it was so real, and it's like, dude, it's not real. They even made like a pretend doco to say it was real when it wasn't. Now, do we have AJ back for real now?
Yep, it took me a while this time.
Yeah. Well, as I was trying to tell you before, Pat's pick for number 5 was the Blair Witch Project. So do you have anything to say about it? As I think I've said my piece now and Pat said his piece.
Well, for Blair Witch Project, I'll have to save my comments for another installment in the list.
I have to agree with Adam. I might have to save my installment for later in the list as well.
I'm cutting you off.
Yeah, sorry. I should probably say why that I chose this. I chose it for the fact that it did something that no other film had done before.
Yeah.
And that was, I thought that was significant because that's what I was going for with this pick. I think I should have said that right off the top, but I basically, yeah, it was that this whole sort of full documentary, you know, is it real, is it not, you know, sort of thing, this wasn't done before. And the whole thing with the internet being in its infancy and not people not being able to clue in and figure out that, oh, yeah, this is a bunch of crap, and it's like, this didn't actually happen. Mm. But it was just that sort of thing is, it's all context.
Yeah. Very true. Okay. So hopefully he's not going to connect on us. I'll ask AJ for his number five.
All right. Actually, my list changed a little bit since you said that the starting point was 1999, so I had to add a movie. So, like, before I say my number five, I have to pay tribute to the one that would have been number five, which is Willard, which is one of the creepiest, funniest, just absolutely just, like, almost dead-on perfect horror movies the past couple years, mostly because, like, Crispin Glover did such a fantastic job acting in it. But my number five pick is a fairly recent one, and that is The Signal.
Not seen it.
I've seen it.
I can't comprehend.
I can't say that I have seen it either. I keep on thinking of Frequency with Jodie Foster. I'm like, no, that's not it.
You mean Contact?
Oh, yeah, yeah, Contact. Yeah.
I don't think it's Dennis Quaid one, although that's a really awesome movie, too.
Actually, I like the Dennis Quaid Frequency.
I like it as well.
Because
the Signal sort of brought to the thing I liked about it was, first of all, I had to rent it and, oh, this could be all right, but it turned out to be really well done. And what I liked most is that it sort of presented like three different horror styles in one movie and looks it through these three different characters. In the one, you just have straight up balls to the wall, holy shit, there's an outbreak of violence, let's get away. And the second was this really twisted, warped, dark comedy as you, like, went into the head of one of the guys who was infected by the rage, madness, whatever. And then the third one was more dramatic, like, race to the finish, let's get through this. And it really juggled those elements pretty well. And instead of just kind of having them in, like, slapdash chunks, it sort of made it flow really well. And I really loved its approach, and it was just plain old fun. It was just a fun movie.
I know what movie you're talking about now because I just looked it up. So I did want to see it, but I just never got around to it.
Oh,
yeah, I can't say that I've seen it either. Unfortunately, I do remember when I was doing the news for Arrow in the Head. I do remember posting news items for it, but unfortunately, like I said, I haven't seen it.
I'm probably the only one who has seen it other than Adam, and yeah, I really liked it as well. Probably not, probably wouldn't, because it made my top 10 for that year, top 10 horror films. It was like number 10, but like I enjoyed it, but I wouldn't, but I definitely agree. I did like that it was how it, like Adam was saying, that the use of having three different styles into the movie, like three different segments that has their own kind of unique style and tone to it.
Yeah, that was the kind of thing that I thought was interesting, like that caught my attention to want to see it, but I just didn't get around to actually seeing it. And AJ's gone yet again, so have to add him back somehow. He's connecting, I think.
Calling now.
Let me get Audacity up again, and I'll just pull. Okay, so I'll go with my number five, and I decided to pick 28 Days Later, which was from 2002 by Danny Boyle. Now, you guys have all seen 28 Days Later, I'm assuming?
Oh, yes, I remember seeing it.
Yes.
I remember getting into debates with my brother and his friend about whether they were actually zombies or whether they were just enraged psychopaths.
I always had this argument. I said, well, it's established that there was a virus. As far as I'm concerned, it's a virus. They don't really look like zombies. And then everyone just copied their zombies to look like these disease-infested things from 28 Days Later, which was annoying. Yeah. But I thought just like the tone of the film and the pace of the film, everything was just so, it just, for me, it just all worked really, really well. And when I first saw it, it completely blew me away and I loved it. And I watched it again. Then I watched it again and I just completely just fell in love with Cillian Murphy from then on. But just like the characters and the dynamic of everyone and the situation, everything about it just rocked, basically.
Yeah, there was a certain visceralness of it. And I mean, like, I'm thinking of the part where the one guy is bitten and he's like, no, wait. And she tells him anyways. And I'm like, this is real, man. This is hard.
I like that because before she kills the guy, it sets him up to be like he's going to be a major character throughout the whole movie.
Mm.
And they just, like, you know, fuck it. Like, you know, he gets infected. Let's kill him.
Yeah. I looked at it as, like, it was like a no-holds-barred kind of thing as well. Like, it's not going to be tame. And that,
like, nobody's safe. Anything goes.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I've, you know, been a Danny Boyle fan. And, you know, I just thought this was so freaking awesome. And actually, the sequel, I thought, held up pretty well as well. Even though Danny Boyle didn't direct it, but he still had a hand in it.
Yeah.
But
I gotta say, the sequel, 28 Weeks Later, is the only movie to actually make me physically ill at the theater.
Why is that?
To the point where I run out and vomit. It got to me that much.
Oh,
and, like, I survived Planet Terror, like the zombie chopping with the helicopter. I went through that just fine, but 28 Weeks Later, I couldn't take it. So I had to go see it again a couple weeks later.
I can
Did
see
you go see it 28 Weeks Later?
Yeah.
Yeah. He went and saw it 28 Weeks Later a few weeks later. That's a mouthful.
I went out on a big part of the movie. I'm not spoiling anything, but, like, when I had to go out, like, there was this, like, other, like, this outbreak was just happening, and when I came back, like, half the friggin' England had been firebombed. I'm like, what the hell did I miss?
Yeah, it's pretty full on, like, well, both movies are, but yeah, I gotta say, this movie, like, it was a trendsetter as well, because everyone just wanted to copy this movie after that.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
that's my pick for number 5. So we'll go.
Has anyone ever seen this, like, because
yeah.
I really love 28 Days Later, and when I bought the DVD, I loved the DVD because it has, like, a whole 20-minute alternate ending. And what's cool about it's they did shoot it. Like, they have other alternate endings, but the major one they did was, like, it was completely different from the scene where a character, I don't want to spoil it, a major character gets infected, and from there, the original ending was, like, since they didn't shoot it and they scrapped it, but so they did it all in storyboards and had both the screenwriter, who's the screenwriter?
Was that Garland who did that?
Yeah, is that Alex? Yeah, Alex Garland. He, like, did the narration, like, you know, the script narration, and Danny Boyle did the voices of all the actors. And it was just really cool to see that. And it was just funny, though, it got to a point where they just think, yeah, we got to this point and we realized how we're going to end this movie, and we realized that even we're stretching a bit too much. Like, because there was a way to cure the virus, and it involved, like, blood transfusion. And it was funny. It's like the movie stopped and they're just going, then that we just realized, you know, it's not possible to do a full body blood transfusion. You would die. So, yeah, and it was just a really cool feature to see. And just, like, even, like, you're sure you have your alternate endings that only last for a few minutes, but seeing one that would have changed the movie entirely makes it even more impressive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm just remembering it now, just seeing the alternate endings, including the storyboarded one, and just having Danny Boyle voice the characters like that. And yeah, I can understand that it's just, like, really bleak. And then I think, like, this all started because some animal rights activist decided to free some chimpanzees. And
what
it's
a
like,
bunch of idiots.
Is this some sort of jab at the at like PETA or something like that? And it's like,
everybody knows PETA's going to destroy the world.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The whole movie is a really clever slam against Ralph Nader.
Anyway, we'll go around again for number four, so I'll hand it off to the terrible one.
Yep. That's
your new name, the terrible one.
Yes, the terrible one, because I am terrible. Anyway, my number four is a film that actually came out last year, and actually not only was it my favorite horror film from last year, it was also my number three my number three film of the year as well, behind The Dark Knight and The Wrestler, and the movie is Let the Right One In.
Nice.
I love it.
Should point out, depending on when somebody hears this, that you're talking about the original.
The original. The original Let the Right One In, but it's all right, because the remake at the moment is being called Let Me In. So,
and I say let me out because I don't want to see it.
Oh, I'm curious about seeing the remake. Like, it's not going to be as good as the original.
I think
but
it's just going to make me angry because the original was so fantastic. I hate having to say it's original.
Yeah. But I think if it, because I know the, because I've never read the actual book that it was based on. So from what I hear, the book is slightly different and has a lot more stuff in it that they didn't put into the movie. So maybe if it's more of a faithful adaptation.
Yeah, I'm tempted to read it because I always see it for sale now.
Yeah. I actually saw it on sale when I was in London. I was tempted to buy it, but I decided not to at the end because I thought that would be just too much for just to carry around and all that. Mm. So I just bought Viva Vendetta instead. But, Let the Right One In. It's a film that when I saw it the first time, it really, and I've seen it again since, it's a film that actually really blew me away the first time I saw it because it really is a coming of age story that just happens to be somewhat of a romance between a 13-year-old boy and a vampire.
And they don't glitter and be stupid and shit.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I'll say it's a much more effective romance than Twilight would ever be.
Yes.
And I just thought it was like, I just thought it looked fantastic. The visual style of the film was like, it's very just simple, but very beautiful to look at. The performances from the two leads were fantastic. Yeah. Like probably some of the best performances by child actors I've seen this decade.
Definitely.
And definitely also, agree. And it was just so, and also it brought a lot of really interesting ideas to the table, especially with the vampire folklore.
Mm.
And one of them I found interesting was like what happens when a vampire actually steps into a house without being invited.
Mm.
And it was, and that scene, like I think we've all wondered what would happen. And just like, and I saw it again and it just good. Really impressed me. And it was originally an original idea. And, you know, I might spoil this, but has anyone else seen Let the Right One In?
Well, yeah.
I haven't, again.
Oh. Okay, again, well, I won't say it, but it's like, it's a really good scene. And I just love that it really, like it is, it's really a story of childhood, pretty much, and just masquerading as a vampire film.
The one thing that I didn't like about this movie, and I won't spoil it, it's just this one scene, and I don't think it suited the movie, and it just looks stupid, and it's one that involved the cats.
Oh, yeah,
that's
that
all
scene.
I'm going to say. But the rest of it, like the look and feel of it was just amazing.
Yeah, like really I think the experience. That scene with the cats was definitely very hokey.
Mm.
And that if I had to have one negative comment about the film, it would probably just be that scene, but it never bothered me too much. But my absolutely favorite scene in the entire film is the ending.
Yeah.
And it's all, there's this one scene that's done in one shot. And when I saw that, it was like one of the most amazing shots I've ever seen in a film.
Mm.
And it, again, it's the less is more approach. And I just, yeah, I was just thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I really, really love this film.
You made a good point. You made a good point there about how it does incorporate a lot of stuff like vampire lore that we kind of know about, but it doesn't feel like being rehashed. It doesn't feel like, oh God, here we go again with the stupid cliches. Yeah. And it's all about the presentation. I've always thought about Twilight. It's not a bad idea. It's the execution that just screws it up royally. And what Twilight did wrong, Let the Right One In does just right. It does it right.
And actually, what's interesting, though, when I watched it again on DVD, I didn't even notice this the first time. And it's kind of a spoiler, so you might have to block your ears for this one, Pat. But there's a scene like every time Ellie. Every time she gets really hungry, or like if there's blood around, there's like a quick shot of her like looking old, grown up. Okay. And it only goes for like a split second. Like I didn't even notice this the first time until I saw it the second time, and I'm like, she'll look like a child, and all of a sudden she'll just like look like a really old woman. And I think that was kind of like trying to show her real age, like if she was still human.
Mm-hmm.
And I never even noticed it the first time I saw it. And they do it about 2-3 times through the movie.
Okay.
And yeah, it's just little things like that. And I just love the little touches of what the film does. Mm-hmm. Again, with the vampire lore and just,
yeah,
and just with the characters. And it really, it's just really a really realistic look at childhood.
Yeah.
And I think that's...
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that I think that's some of the best horror films are films that yeah, they're horror films, but they work on different themes that aren't horror. Like with Let the Right One In, it's focusing on the painful side of childhood and first romance as a kid.
It's funny you mention that, because I'll be bringing something similar up with my number 4.
I have to add here, funny you mentioned that the DVD release. The DVD release here, from what I understand, in North America, the subtitles for it are altered as such, and apparently this caused a bit of a controversy with it, because some of the meaning that was lost between the original subtitles and the subtitles that were used for this particular DVD. I can't remember what company it was, but Magnolia used a different set of DVD subtitles, and certain meanings were lost because of that. And it's just, and whether it was because of the fact that they decided, like, oh, you know, in their infinite wisdom, it's like, oh, this would appeal to American audiences much more than what the initial subtitles meanings were. And it was just that, if you've seen the movie and you know what the subtitle, what the original intention was for these subtitles, and what Magnolia had done, you would be pissed, apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently the new one is available, because I saw it at Best Buy, and you can tell which DVD has which subtitles,
didn't they have to, like, if you didn't want the new crappy subtitles, you could send it back and they'd replace the disc or something?
I'm not sure how that worked. I want to say that they said, you're going to have to buy a new thing. You're going to have to buy
probably
a new one.
Yeah.
I think it was a studio decision on that. They felt that, you know, this was their intention, this is what they're trying to say, and they altered some of those accordingly, but they kind of, in doing so, they kind of changed the entire meaning of it, and it was just not good.
Yeah. Well, luckily we didn't have that problem in Australia, because that first thing I did was watch it, and it was it was still the original, from where, some of the, little the meanings, and also the little jokes, that they had for the movie. It was still the same as it was in the theatrical version.
Yeah, I saw the original subtitled one.
Yeah.
But, we'll move swiftly along, and we'll hand it over to Pat for his number 4 pick.
Okay. This one, I really was kind of debating. It's like, do I really this is a sort of like a guilty pleasure for me, but also the fact that it was took forever. It was forever in the making. It was like on the drawing board way back in 1987. And it just never materialized. And then finally, in 2003, it came about thanks in part to Ronnie Yu. I'm talking about Freddy versus Jason.
Yes.
And it was, I just went nuts when I first saw the teaser trailer for this film. Yeah. I watched it over and over again, and I was like, holy crap, it's finally getting made. And I was just so ecstatic. And then I found out that Keen Hodder wasn't in it, and I was like, oh, fuck.
I love Freddy versus Jason.
It's definitely a guilty pleasure. I saw this again on my birthday. It was
funny. I saw it like a few days before my birthday because it came out because I saw it in cinemas. And, like, I was just sitting there, and I was as giddy as a schoolgirl just sitting back watching, like, you know, Freddy and Jason going at it. Like, I rewatched it again last year, and, like, yeah, the, like, the acting is bad and the dialogue's bad and all that, but fuck it, you know, it's such fun. An entertaining film.
It's just fun. It's just fun.
Jason and it delivers.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just silly fun, basically. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just sit back and enjoy it. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know some people were, some fans were giving Ronnie Yu flack over the fact that Kane Hodder was involved, and Kane Hodder himself was, you know, saying that they didn't cast him because he wasn't Canadian, and it was Canadian-based production, actually, and it was, I should correct that, it was an American-based production, but it was shot in Vancouver. And part of the stipulation for shooting in Canada is that a certain percentage of the actors involved in the production have to be Canadian. And one unfortunate thing was that they were short Canadians. And so they decided, well, we'll make up some lame excuse that Ken Kurtzinger, you know, he has expressive eyes or something like that. And it was really just a matter of fact that, you know, they didn't have Ken on board. They couldn't shoot the movie in Vancouver. And so that's why he was Jason and not Kane. And Kane, for, you know, I love him as Jason, and I will continue to love him as Jason, as the true Jason. No disrespect to Ken or Derek over their performances, but it was just, you know, talk of having Jason versus Freddy Krueger in Jason X Jason X DVD, and Kane showing his enthusiasm over it. It was just, you know, like, it was kind of disappointing at the end that.
Yeah.
Kane was involved.
It didn't bother me too much because I thought, you know what, Freddy and Jason going at it, that's a good one for me.
Yeah, that was my feeling. But, I was like, yeah, but it kind of would have been just retarded if Robert Englund wasn't Freddy, because he's the only Freddy until the reboot, but it would not have really worked, I don't think.
Yeah, Jason was more easily replaceable because there's been, like, there's different actors playing Jason, so they just had to pass the mantle on to somebody else, but Freddy is Robert Englund, and they're one and the same, and you can't separate them.
Mm.
And I will say this, though, that Ron Yu effectively made Freddy scary again. He made him into a child molester and murderer again, rather than the wisecracking goofball that, you know, would get a pipe bomb stuck in it, shoved down his throat in Freddy's dad, and he's like, oh, or not shoved down his throat, but shoved into his chest, and it's like, oh, kid, and it just blew up.
Like, he still had his little one-liners here and there, but there were more darker one-liners. than, like, say...
It was more like the original idea of Freddy rather than what he'd become, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes exactly sense.
Yeah.
Ronnie, you should reboot every horror franchise.
Ronnie, use Leprechaun. I will pay through the nose to see that.
Oh, that would be awesome.
In the hood. In the hood. Nothing less than in the hood.
Yeah. Although, I have to admit, I'm really disappointed that we never got to see Freddy versus Jason versus Ash.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that would have been... Because I read the treatment for it, and this the treatment alone just sounded completely awesome. And, like, mm. I know they brought out, like, they used that exact treatment for the mini comic book series that they brought out.
I have read that. That's actually pretty good comic series, mini series, the Freddy versus Jason versus Ash, because you can just picture Bruce Campbell doing Ash as only Bruce Campbell can.
But I
remember that right after Freddy versus Jason was the hit that it was, the people were talking about, it was like, sequel. It's like, what are we going to have? Like, Freddy versus Jason versus Ash, or Freddy versus Jason versus Pinhead. And then, like, one of the original endings that they had storyboarded for the film involved Freddy and Jason continuing their fight in hell. And then Pinhead shows up and asks them, "Gentlemen, what's the problem?" or something like that.
I would love to have seen that ending. I would give anything to see that ending.
I wouldn't watch that ending because the one thing that scares me just from the look of him is Pinhead. Oh, it gives me nightmares.
Actually, last year I saw Bruce Campbell when he did a Q&A at one of his My Name is Bruce screenings. And, like, of course, someone had to ask about whatever happened to Freddy versus Jason versus Ash. And he pretty much said that they had offered him to do it, and he was like, "Yeah, I'm all for it. Can I kill them?" They go, "No." And that was the end of it.
That would have been
like,
epic.
If I can't kill them, nothing to one.
That would have been so epic.
Oh, what was that?
Somebody's ringing.
It's my Christmas alarm clock.
All right, you better turn it off.
It's the evil... It's the...
well, as long as he doesn't disconnect, AJ can give us his number 4.
I'm good.
If he wants to keep his Christmas thing going.
It's foreboding the next movie.
So,
alright, my number 4?
Yep,
is it Vault Clowns?
It's like, my number 4 pick, some will debate its status as a horror movie, but it has enough horror elements in there for me to put it on the list. It's called Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter.
I haven't even heard of this one, but damn it, I want to see it.
I've never seen it.
It's an extremely low budget film, like I need to even say that, and it's Canadian, where Jesus comes back, fight vampires who are killing lesbians to harvest their skin to walk in the daylight, and he does so with the help of a Mexican wrestler. And
I'm
sold. Why do they need to kill the lesbians? Why do they need lesbian skin?
Just because.
Okay, is that just so they could put, like, naked lesbians in the movie?
Just because, or? Like, to be able to put on the headline in the newspaper early in the movie, Canada suffers critical lesbian shortage.
Right. This sounds incredible.
It is the funniest thing.
This sounds incredible.
There's plenty of clips you can find online, but there's an especially funny scene where he fights, like, this group of atheists who just, like, come out of this, like, clown car, just one after the other, and it's just, like, the most phony, unprofessional, like, martial arts choreography ever, but you are just sitting there, and you are having a blast the entire time.
I have to see this movie.
I'm sold. I want to check this movie out now.
Like any movie where in a fight scene, like Jesus smacks his chest and goes, "Body of Christ."
That sounds epic.
I'm sure like some people will like think of it as like, you know, you can't do this. And I'm sure like God has a sense of humor and is like, "Oh yeah, that's funny. Yeah."
I'll say this.
I don't want to say it has a profound edge because it's just all for goofs. but it isn't, like, completely blasphemous. It treats religion with respect. It has a lot of fun with it, but it's not like, yeah, Jesus sucks or anything like that. It's just having a few laughs.
Yeah.
I'll say this. I'm a Catholic, and I want to see this movie.
I'm a nothing, and I will gladly see this movie.
See Jesus impale a vampire with a toothpick. That's worth it alone.
That's epic. I have to see this movie.
And the last thing, it ends with the song "Everybody Gets Laid Tonight."
Yes.
This sounds incredible. Epic.
It's awesome. It's a classic.
It sounds incredible.
Oh man.
I was sold as soon as you said that lesbians getting their skin ripped off. I was like, I'm sold on this movie. Yeah. Vampires. It's got everything.
It appears to.
It's presented like an old kung fu movie, so like all the dialogue is out of sync, and it's like filmed on video.
No.
Oh.
This sounds even more epic than it was sounding.
Forget the Expendables. I'm about to have an orgasm now.
Well, just mute your microphone, please.
Hold on, I just got to go clean myself up.
Well, I'll say my number four, and it doesn't have lesbians getting skinned or Jesus killing vampires or anything like that. But my pick has to go to Ginger Snaps, which is from, what is it, 2000 or 2001, I think?
2000, I think.
Yeah. When I first saw this movie, I was just blown away. I loved it so much. And I was like, how old was I at the time? I'm not sure. I think I was 16 or 17 or something like that. So it was 8 years ago, yeah. I just thought it was such a great, like, horror movie. It was a great werewolf movie. It was a great teenage movie. But it also, it was a good film for girls because the whole werewolf thing was like a metaphor for entering into womanhood. And I just thought they did it so effectively. And I really thought the two main girls, Bridget and Ginger, which was Catherine Isabel and Emily Perkins, were just so good in this movie. And it had some really cool, like, effects, and the eventual, like, transformation looked pretty good for something that, you know, didn't have a huge budget.
And it was Canadian made, so you know that the budget went to good use.
I was going to say, it was a Canadian movie.
Yes, it was. And I remember, I actually did not see it in theaters. Because I was a little young for it, unfortunately. But I remember hearing about this from Arrow in the Head. And so it's like, this is a metaphor for chicks being on the rag. And I'm like, oh, man. When I finally did see it, I'm like, oh, yeah, I can see that. And, yes, the effects, even though a sort of hairless werewolf didn't exactly gel with me, I mean, the effects... The effect was good, but it was just, you know, even still, I agree with that. It's a good movie, and it was a nice spin on werewolf movies, and it's just something that was fresh.
Yeah, they kind of like had their own like mythos for the werewolves, and I thought it worked. Like, it worked for me, and especially like how they come up with a way to cure it, and I thought that, you know, it made sense in the way that they presented it, but it's still like a fun movie, and you know, I like the characters, and they're like messed up and twisted, like these two weirdo sisters, and some of the stuff they do, it's like, it's just so weird and odd, but it's enjoyable, like their whole taking pictures of them in murder scenes and suicide scenes. It's just so dark as well, like, I just thought it's a great movie, and it's definitely like one of my all-time favorite movies, so it had to be on the list.
And please note, emo Canadian teenage girls aren't all like that. If you come to Canada, it's just like, we're not all like that.
I really liked Ginger Snaps, although I can't express how disappointed I was when I went on like a city-wide hunt through like all these video stars to find Ginger Snaps 2, And when I watched it, when I got home, oh man.
Got through 10 minutes and I switched it off, and I haven't attempted to watch it since.
Yeah, the sequels weren't that good. Like, it's been like, because I haven't seen it since it first came out, and at the time, I think because I just really didn't appreciate what it was doing at the time, and it's definitely a film I really want to go back and revisit it, because there were a lot of elements I did like. I did like that, of course, both Catherine Isabel and Emily Perkins, they were both great, and also, like I was saying about Let the Right One In, how that movie is really about childhood, and this film to me is really about puberty and I like it when horror films take something that we can all relate to and put a horror movie twist on it.
To it, but it's more than just like, oh, it's a metaphor about a woman, you know, girl getting her period, whatever, but it's also, you know, it's about being an outcast and, you know, growing up as well, just, you know, and dealing with shit in high school. And, you know, I was in high school at the time, and, you know, being like in the kind of nerdy group, and you know what it's like being a bit of an outcast, but you're cool anyway.
And it had that dark comedy to it that really helps. It wasn't just like you have a stone face the whole time. Like the humor just alleviated the situation, so you can have fun and appreciate the themes it was trying to get across.
But like I said, it's one of my probably like my favorite movies in general. So I definitely had to put it on the list. And I don't have this on DVD. I still have my VHS copy, which I watched last month. So it's a bit old school.
And we'll say that for the North American listeners, I should say, the Canadian DVD is actually the one with all the special features, the complete special features, because I'm just doing, you know, looking up on DVD Compare, and yeah, we've got all the features, dude.
I've seen that edition. Someone I know bought it, but I'm not sure, like, it's hard to get, someone was saying, but I don't know how true that actually is. I can probably just get it off Amazon.
I just think it's kind of a shame that both Catherine Isabel and Emily Perkins have got much to do since then.
Well, Isabel was in Freddy vs. Jason.
Yeah, but she's been mostly. Oh yeah, she was in those ones. Like that was like back in earlier this decade, but lately there just haven't been much. Like, I mean, the last thing I saw Emily Perkins in was She's the Man.
You watched She's the Man?
Yeah, She's the Man. She was in that movie. And she played, like, the nerdy girl with, like, this big back brace or something.
Actually, I want to say that Emily Perkins, she was in Juno, I'm going to say, as the clerk at the Planned Parenthood clinic.
Oh, yeah, she was, too. Yeah, I forgot she was in that.
And coincidentally, Ellen Page is Canadian as well. And she's actually gone on. She was originally in Hard Candy, which was... that movie in itself was just something else, and she's a good actress as well, Ellen Page. She's gone on, and as you said, it's unfortunate that the other two Canadian women haven't gotten their big break yet, but unfortunately. So.
Yeah.
I'll give it back. Hand it back, or whatever the saying is there, to our terrible one for number three.
Yep, my number three is... Oh, we've just lost AJ again.
Oh, yippee! Well, I'll pause it and we'll get him back. That way you can start and he can... And, all right, we're unpaused, so you can... Number three.
Okay, my number three is a film that came out in 2005, and not only was this my number one horror film of the year, but it happens to also be my number one film of that year period. And the film is Neil Marshall's The Descent.
Scariest film I've seen in a long time. Holy crap.
Yes.
I have a lot to say about this movie, and I don't know if you're going to want me to say anything about it. So,
Well, I'll let you say what you want to say first, and then if I don't like it, I'll just tell you to shut up, man.
All right. I got to make this perfectly clear that I saw this movie after all the hype, and I was expecting so much, and I'm sorry, but it did not deliver for me. Now, it's not to say that I didn't think it was a good movie, because I do think it is a good movie. It's a well-made movie. But everything that people were saying about it being scary and this and that, it didn't work for me. I have been in caves before and I wasn't scared. The whole claustrophobia thing didn't scare me. And I found the characters to be extremely irritating to the point that I probably would have beat the shit out of that Juno chick for taking me in a fucking cave that nobody knew about. Like, why the fuck didn't they beat the shit out of her? That didn't make any sense to me. Like, what a fucking cunt. And I just found them so irritating. And then when we got to the cave monsters, I thought, this is really silly as well. They looked like Gollum, and Gollum's just not scary. And, duh, it was just, it was irritating. Like, I'm thinking this all is working really well in some ways, but then I'm not scared. These women are stupid dumbasses, and at least, like, because we got the original UK ending, and it's not a happy ending, and I like movies that do that, so that kind of won me over in that way, but I was not scared, I was irritated, and I just don't get how some things people found scary, and you can try and explain it to me.
Well,
that's 2.5, right?
Hey?
That's 2.5 stars, right?
I think so.
But, well, okay, well.
It's 2.5 out of 5, if okay, that's what you're aiming at.
I wouldn't say it was scary. Like, I didn't have nightmares or anything after I watched it, but I did think it was very intense, and it did have a lot of moments in it. A lot of great sort of jump scares in it. Actually, good, honest to God, good jump scares, especially like the one with the video camera scene.
Oh, yes.
Yes, and that, like, even the one at the beginning, like, where she's had that dream sequence, even that made me jump. And to me, I guess the descent to me is, I just absolutely love everything about the film. I think everybody in the cast did a terrific job. I really love Shauna McDonald and Natalie Mendoza. I think because I felt like their characters felt real to me, like they felt like real human beings.
They were annoying women.
Sorry. Oh, you could say that about like...
But women can be annoying, and if I was with those women, I probably would have killed them all and smashed their heads in with rocks.
But
don't fear the cave. Don't fear the creatures. Fear me.
Yeah. But
sorry.
Okay. it just like as it. That's what I mean. Like all the characters actually felt real. Like their dialogue felt realistic to me. Their personalities, even that. Like some of them were like, you know, like the horror stereotypes, but they didn't feel like horror stereotypes. They just felt like natural, real human beings. And when the shit sort of, and I love that the first 50 minutes of that movie, it's just like, you just got, it's just setting up the characters and you're just going through these caves and it's very claustrophobic, especially when they go through that tunnel that pretty much almost caves them in. And you just, and just being down in a place that, and I get it, it's a thing that people can relate to, is like being stuck in a cave, like going down in a cave, getting trapped and pretty much and not getting out. And I just, and also once the shit hits the fan, it becomes really intense. The crawlers, even though, they kind of do look like Gollum from the Lord of the Rings movies, but they were very, very, really scary characters. Cause they could be like, how they were made from the makeup and the design, they just look really realistic. And it was beautifully shot, even though it's pretty much just lighted by flashlights or...
There's no doubt about it that it looks fantastic.
Yeah, it, like this having different color schemes, like some scenes it would just be green from just depending on the light usage they have, and some were red, and it just looked absolutely fantastic. And the, like, the violence was brutal without being too gratuitous. And whenever the characters died, I felt really sorry that, and I felt bad that they were got killed because I really liked the characters. And also,
I just
like,
was upset that Juno didn't fucking get her head smashed in straight away.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry. Yeah.
But the, you know, that's the point.
She was like,
she was supposed to be like, why did you do this to your friends, you dumb cow?
Yeah. And,
I'm glad that you said that, Marcy.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the character, but still, I still like Juno because, like, when she had to, like, you know, take down a couple of the crawlers, she went all badass, so I enjoyed that aspect.
I mean, I really think that I should watch it again because it has been a while, and I am willing to give it a chance because maybe I will like it more, but, you know, maybe I might not. But I do want to just see it again and just go in fresh, but... Unfortunately, like, the whole cave claustrophobia thing just, it doesn't scare me because I've been in caves before and I've been in really small spaces and it just didn't really scare me, even though you could, there was, like, a feeling like I'm not going to get out, but I still just wasn't all that scared by being in that situation myself. So it's not, I couldn't really relate to that with what the characters were feeling as well. So
I think a lot of it was the fact that they were trying something new in that fact that it played off the whole claustrophobic sort of surroundings of the cave.
Mm.
And it was just, I mean, the only other film that I can think of offhand that actually played with the sort of claustrophobia is Star Six, which is very good. You could go as far as to say The Abyss, just having that sort of being, you know, underwater, isolated, and just being alone,
where you're coming from.
You know, just plays with your mind. And I think that's what Neil Marshall really sort of struck home with it.
But I'll give it to Neil Marshall that, you know, I think he's he did a good job, like, directing the movie. And I did think that, you know, the women did do good in their roles, but I just had my issues with it, obviously. And when I tell people that, you know, I like the movie, but I didn't love it, everyone just wants to, like, put a rock to my head. But I'm sorry, I respect people love this movie, but I also want the respect back that I didn't love it.
You're not getting mine. Anyway.
You're gone.
I'm joking. No. But the main thing I really love about this film, like you said not long ago, Marcy, was the ending. I absolutely, the original ending.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore the original ending. And I just love, like, it kind of gives you, like, an idea, like, it's a thought-provoking ending. Like, it's, again, it's a bleak ending, but it's also at the same time thought-provoking.
Ways. Yeah. You can take it in different ways, but... I liked that it had, I mean, obviously the other ending is like a happy ending, but I thought giving it this bleak ending, like, it actually had balls to do that, which was good. Mm. It's definitely a positive about the movie.
Mm. And I have, like, my own interpretation of what the original ending is about, and I won't go into it because, you know, I don't want to spoil it for other people who haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But, It's probably one of my favorite endings of this year. And, you know, it's weird. I don't know what it is about this film because, like, it's only until, like, this past year about thinking about the film and actually having it as my number one film of 2005. Like, it started off as my number 10 and then it sort of slowly moved up. And it's like I realized that out of all the films that were in my top 10 for that year, this was the one I actually saw the most and actually... And also at the same time... had a connection with for some reason. I guess I responded to the emotional side of this film. And I know, and it's weird, but I just love just everything about it. Like the ambiguity of it about Acero. Like, is she going insane? Is she seeing things or, like, you know, just stuff like that.
Mm.
Like, it really delves into the psychological part of what she's going through, and just like, and having all the, just, kind of lost track then. I just, all I can just say, I just adore everything about this film. I like a certain sequel that was made of this film, which, which I actually did see while I was in, Edinburgh, and let's just say it's a sequel I wish was never made, and was absolutely pointless, and was just pretty bad, and
I just thought this film didn't need a sequel.
Yeah.
Why did it?
I agree.
Need one?
Yeah.
It was, it's something. I don't think it needed one. Like, in the way that they've done it, like, you could always just bring people back in the cave and do whatever, but they kind of brought back characters for the sequel, and that just,
like, I think
silly.
I wouldn't have disliked the movie so much if it was whole new characters. But if the sequel, like, again, brings back a couple of the original characters, and also the plot to the film, once they get down in the cave, it pretty much follows the exact same beats as the original. The original, like, when they get down the cave, this happens and that happens and such happens. Like, it follows the exact same beats. And there's a moment in the film, I don't want to spoil it, but
I'm never going to watch it.
it was like the moment where it pretty much went downhill from there. Like, I was watching it and I thought, this is really average. It's average, but it's kind of watchable. But then once it got to this point, it just went completely downhill from there, and I absolutely hated it. But whenever remakes and sequels are announced, I don't have that knee-jerk reaction that a lot of people have. But when it came to, like, they say, oh, we're going to do a sequel to The Descent, I thought, no, 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 you don't need a sequel. The film doesn't need one, and they went and did it, and, yeah, it was pretty much what I expected it to be. So, but I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about, but, The Descent, absolutely love it. And, yeah, it's pretty much, that's pretty much it, really. I absolutely adore this film.
Well, AJ disconnected and came back.
I'm really sorry.
Yeah, it's all right. just don't disappear when it's your turn. I'll pass it over to Pat for his number three. It's number three, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay, I'll try and keep it short. I know that we're sort of rambling on, but understand this. Oh yeah. Anyways, speaking of Neil Marshall and speaking of Ginger Snaps, number three pick. I'm pretty sure that some folks have already figured it out. Dog Soldiers was for me. That is my favorite. That is my favorite werewolf movie. Recent werewolf movie. I mean, like, obviously you got, like, The Howling and American Werewolf in London. But Dog Soldiers did something new and put a twist on it. And plus it was fun. I mean, and it was funny. And, having Kevin McKidd as Fred Cooper and just having that sort of, like, that sort of gruff Scottish sort of act. I kind of lost my train of thought, but
as we do on this show.
I mean, it was just a fun movie, and I mean, like, Neil Marshall made, like, all sorts of references to, like, The Matrix and The Wrath of Khan and The Evil Dead and all sorts of stuff, and it's just the effects for the werewolves. I mean, if you see the special features for the film, and you can actually see just with the getup that they had on it, it was really uncomfortable. But I mean, the whole thing was just—it was so effective. And I haven't got much more to say about it other than, you know, if you haven't seen it, see it. It's just so much fun. I've done, got werewolves, it's got soldiers, it's got, you know, everything you'd want to, you'd expect to see in a film like Dog Soldiers.
Yeah, I really and need to watch it again. I haven't seen it since I think it came out.
Yeah, Dog Soldiers I thought was a lot of fun, and like I didn't get to say anything about The Descent, but kind of going back to that, and Neil Marshall in general, it just kind of shows you how sure he is of a filmmaker, because when he sets out on a project and he has a style in mind, he does it. Like Dog Soldiers, like a kind of fun Predator style movie, and then The Descent is like the more claustrophobic, intense movie. And he worked it there, and Doomsday, while it wasn't as good as the other two, was his, like, big 80s Escape from New York-style action movie, and it was entertaining enough, and he's one of these guys, he's a guy that knows what he wants to do, and then he goes out and does it with visual flair, and he has a good knack for characters, and he just nails it.
I agree. Dog Souls is a lot of fun. Like, I actually, it was one of the few blind buys I did it, and I'm so glad I did, because it was such a great film. It is, like you guys said, it's absolutely fun from start to finish, and I loved all the references to like other films and all, and also the performances were really good, and the werewolf designs were really great, and it's just, it's gory, it's just a lot of fun. If I had to say, like, if I had to make like a list of say the top 10 entertaining horror films of the decade, this would definitely be on there for sure.
Yeah, the only unfortunate thing about the film was the fact that the sequel that they had planned to do, Dog Soldiers Fresh Meat, and I mean...
That sounds terrible.
It's been in development hell for I don't know how long, and it's just been... it's basically disappeared, and that's unfortunate, because you know, you want to know what happened, you know, right after the ending of the film, and I was just like, no.
I would rather have seen the Dog Soldiers than The Descent personally. And only one of those got made, so.
And it wasn't the one you wanted.
Yes, it wasn't the one that I wanted.
Gotta say, Neil Marshall's making quite the impact on the list. For, you know, being that you just mentioned The Descent and now we've got Dog Soldiers, so he's got a nice place at number 3 at the moment. So if I knew him, I'd send him the podcast so he could listen to
the Leo.
Except, you know, maybe he wouldn't so much like that what I had to say about The Descent, but I'm sure he appreciates a different opinion. At least I'd hope so.
I think you can friend him on Facebook, I think.
Yeah, I should do that.
Yeah.
We can, hopefully he's not going to disconnect on us. This is just the ongoing joke of the podcast.
So far I'm here.
Yeah. I'll pass it over to you, AJ, and you can give us your number 3.
All right, number 3, and this kind of goes to a conversation Bede and I were having earlier about the French horror movie.
Call him the terrible one.
Where I'm so disappointed. Managed to squeeze through with just sheer balls to the walls, ferocity, and awesomeness, and that's Inside.
Mm. Ooh.
The movie that made me laugh, and nobody understands why.
Oh, I had the same completely.
It's a very uncomfortable movie for those of you listening who haven't seen it. It's a very nasty movie, and it's very intense, but it doesn't drown itself in depression. It doesn't try to be dark for the sake of being bleak and depressing. Like, just everything that the story does, it does in the spirit that it takes on. Like I said, it's really dark and really violent, but it has this sort of grindhouse-style quality to it where you know that the filmmakers are aware of just how flat-out fucking bizarre the turn of events are, but it just turns into this awesome cat-and-mouse game that, as Bede was saying earlier, is a lot like what John Carpenter would have done back in the day, not necessarily in terms of gore, but in terms of just a simple story being played out. And it just runs at just the perfect length, and it just keeps you on the edge the whole time. You're always wondering what in the hell is going on, even as the credits are rolling. And it just keeps you in that mood of like, what? And I just love that, and it did it so well.
Yeah, this movie comes up a lot on my podcast for some bizarre reason, because almost every time it's like, this movie comes up. But I saw it this year. My friend let me borrow his copy, and yeah, I don't think I'd ever seen anything like it, and just some of the violence had me laughing because it was so over the top and unexpected and out of nowhere. I don't really think it's funny for somebody to be getting stabbed and all this kind of thing, but just the way it was presented, I ended up laughing. So,
you know what? It's just the film, now that I think of it, it reminded me a lot of two other French horror films. Yells, a.k.a. Them, which was another great film.
I really liked that.
Haute Tension, High Tension, which is Alex Aja's debut film, and just the sheer amount of gore that was in that film, and combined with the isolation that was in Them, and just smacking it together and making Inside, it was really just hard to take, especially the ending. I mean, you and I, Marcy, we discussed this earlier, in another podcast about just this whole, you know, no holds barred sort of feeling to the film, and then just seeing that, it was just, oh man. I mean, the one part I think that we can probably agree on that took you out of it was the fact that the cop had got up after having, well, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just like, well, it was just like something that just you didn't expect it, but it was just the same man. You gotta be kidding me. Oh, this guy's still alive.
Yeah.
Actually, it's like, it's funny though, because like, even though I really think it's a great movie, and it's definitely one of my favorite of the current sort of French wave of horror films, but it's definitely, even I sitting think, you know, those cops are really stupid.
Yeah, definitely.
and they were, and they'd probably be my only negative thing was that the cops were just complete dumbasses.
It seems to be a cliche in horror movies that the cops are just dumbasses.
Like, I'll give you that. That was, like, one of the few things that was a little inconsistent about the movie, but, like, the experience on the whole just kind of shuffled aside. I just got caught up in what the fuckness.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely, like, when you first watch it, it's certainly a really just unreal experience.
Hmm.
Sorry, I cut you off.
After when I saw Inside, I thought, I've got to show this to people. I've got to show this to people. I've got to show it to my brothers, my friends, and then I realized, my family, some of my family and friends, yeah, they like horror, but I think this might be a little too hardcore for them.
Yeah.
It's kind of the movie, like, if you show it to somebody, you know, who's like, who likes horror, but not like, you know, just like normal, a little bit of taste in horror, they probably might hate you for life if you show them this film.
Yeah.
Sort of like what would happen if you showed them like Audition or Ichi the Killer or something like that. Yeah. I mean, like something like Takashi Miike stuff. And then like, but this was just, you know, and it seems that for AJ and I, just the it seems that you guys, the European horror, you guys are pushing the envelope more, whereas we're the ones that are, you know, stuck in the remake mode sort of thing and playing it safe, and no one's coming through with new ideas and everything like that, and it's unfortunate, but, and so what happens is that we end up taking your ideas and remaking them on our own, and we end up making them crap.
But if I have to say one thing, like, it really is... We can't pretty much talk about Inside without talking about Beatrice Daly, who was amazing in that film. She was scary.
She was my excitement. On the Joblo forums, I do like this usual month in movies thing that Bede knows all about. And for like the entire year of movies that I saw all throughout 2008, Beatrice Daly was my pick for the best actress. Just she affected me the most. She is one of the best horror villainesses of the past decade, if not like the past 50 years.
Oh, yeah. And she, I mean, like seeing her and just like when you first see her and she's just outside and she's just smoking a cigarette and it's like, ugh.
Just the silhouette.
Yeah, compare that to Frontiers and the neo-Nazis that are like, yeah, we're going to kill you. Like, I don't like you.
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, well, darn.
If you've seen this Chainsaw Massacre, you have seen Frontiers. Okay. There's no need to see
it. Yeah, but, yeah, I agree. She was creepy as shit. And I had heard that she had, the actress had spent time in jail or something.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I think she went to jail for attacking a meter maid or something.
Oh, no.
If I'm remembering correctly. I honestly just can't be asked going to IMDb.
So playing this role for her wasn't too much of a stretch.
Wasn't a stretch, no.
she just looks scary and was just...
Yeah.
And of course, just the isolation with Allison Pardy, her character, and just being, you know, alone and not knowing what to do and just having to basically just fend for herself, even though she's pregnant. And it's like, oh, this is, you can see that sort of that visceralness again that, you know, that a lot of horror movies, really successful ones, really capitalize on.
Everyone's gone quiet. Well, I think that'll wrap up that discussion, and I will go with my number three. And this is a horror comedy movie, and I don't know anyone that actually didn't like this movie, so I'll go right along and say Shaun of the Dead.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
This is probably, like, one of the movies I've probably watched the most because I have a tendency to just put it on before I go to bed. So I end up watching, like, the first half and then fall asleep or, you know, fall asleep and then watch the second half. But when I first saw this, I just thought it was so funny. It was so different. It was so much to it. I loved it. I watched it again and again, and I still watch it again and again. Absolutely, I just love this movie.
I agree. I've watched it many times as well, and I saw this film in the cinema, and it was probably one of my favorite cinema experiences as well, because like everybody was all into it, and like they were all laughing at the right moments. And, it's just an hysterical film. It would have to be one of my favorite comedies of this past decade, and it still makes me laugh. And it's great writing as well. Like.
Yeah.
Which is very rare in horror films these days, is having a great script.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got great, well-defined characters, great dialogue.
Yeah.
And it, like, takes all the cliches of zombie movies and spins them around and just brings them to a much funnier light. And it does that superbly.
It's not just that, but there's so much to it as well.
It was funny, and it was humorous and over-the-top campy.
Yeah.
Like, didn't make a huge, like, cartoonish joke about it, but it knew enough about the genre to just have fun.
Yeah.
And it was a lot.
I think because it grounded in reality.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
As well. And, like, say a film like Zombieland, even though I really like that movie a lot as well, but the humor in that is completely different because that's much more broader, more slapstick kind of
humor. I don't get the comparisons to these two movies just because they're both, funny. They're nothing alike at all.
Yeah. Like, I don't see, because they are two very different movies, but I think, like, in terms of, like, say, humor, because Shaun of the Dead kind of grounds it a bit more reality, while Zombieland is much more broader in its humor.
Yeah.
But I still love both. I really love both movies.
I like both movies.
But Shaun of the Dead.
This is just better. Well, not better, but...
Oh, yeah, Sauna Boom is definitely better, but
it's completely different.
Yes, I do.
Comparing them is just retarded, in my opinion. But what I really like about this movie as well is there's so much going on, and you can, like, they even say it, like, Edgar Wright even says it, like, watch the movie, don't pay attention to the main characters and just watch what's going on in the background because you've got something else going on completely and they've just added so much. And he does mention, like, Invasion of the Body Snatchers being, like, you know, one of their inspirations, how there's always something going on with that movie and they try to incorporate that with this. And it is true, when you actually just don't pay attention and you just look in the background, there's all sorts of shit going on. And you'll see, like, characters reappearing and, you know, and just, you know, you can see, like, they've been influenced by so many things, but yet they're still doing their own thing as well. And, you know, they've got these really good characters and they all work. And, you know, the zombies are gross and some of the scenes are gross. And, you know, it does have that horror to it. And, you know, while they are fighting zombies, they're in, like, a really horrible situation. There's still, you know, the dark humour and everything else, and it's just such fun. And it's got a great ending.
You know, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, I mean, those two worked extremely well together.
They have amazing chemistry.
Yes, they have a history, obviously.
Yeah.
But another thing is that you can tell that Edgar Wright, you know, he loves horror movies by the fact that he drops so many references throughout the film. I mean, like, I literally had watched it, and then I was like, I had to pick out all the references, because, I mean, like, Fulci's restaurant, reference to Lucio Fulci, and I mean, like, all the different George Romero references. I mean, like, this is nuts. And just, there's Evil Dead references, Invasion of Body Snatchers, and it's just so much fun just picking out all those sort of references, as well as the comedy between the two of them, Peg and Frost. And it's just, as you said, it's just one of those films that's just unique. It's a, as people put it, it's a rom-zom-com, a romantic zombie comedy. And it's so much fun.
Yeah, the whole romance bit is so fucking hilarious. Just like the situation that Sean gets himself into, and it's everything just works. It's great.
I pretty much Shaun of the Dead was the film that made me a fan of Edgar Wright, because I had never seen Spaced. Up to that point, and I saw that, and then I saw Hot Fuzz, and I finally bought Space when it finally came out on DVD in Australia, and, you know, it made me start having a love affair with with Edgar Wright, and I'm eagerly anticipating Scott Pilgrim versus the World, because I know that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Even though I haven't read it, I would like to actually read it as well. Yeah.
I've read the first two graphic novels, because there's about five at the moment in the series, and they're both very hilarious. The humor is very spaced and it's just right up his alley. And it's just going to be awesome, man.
Good fit then.
Yeah, and Shaun of the Dead is just, it's just a fantastic film. I love it. And And like I said, it has a film, what's rare about horror films, that it actually has characters that you care about.
Yeah.
And in most horror films these days, they just have characters like you just want to see die within the first 15 minutes.
And how great is Bill Nye in it?
Oh, yeah, he was hilarious.
I wish that he was in it more, because he was great.
Cracks me up. There's this one line in the movie that he says, and, like, it's one of those, like, you know, like when you watch a film and there's always that little joke that amuses you, but nobody seems to notice it?
Yes.
It's this one joke where it's after when, well, spoilers for Shaun of the Dead, he gets bitten, after he gets bitten, he's like, you know, it's like, you know, Sean's mum says, oh, you know, you got a bandage up, we'll take it to the hospital. And he's like, oh, don't worry, I just ran it under a tap.
Yeah.
It's just those little things that just, because it just sounds like, it sounds like what something like my dad would say.
Yeah, exactly.
And it just cracks me up.
Actually, I always like saying, you've got red on you. But, I'll just pause. Okay, oh, so my turn. Number two to Mr. Terrible One.
Yep, my number two was a film that came out in 1999, and it was nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture. And it pretty much was a film that started a trend of a career of a director who's either loved or hated by people, and that film is The Sixth Sense.
I won't really chime in for this because I talked about it on my last show because it was a 1999 movie and that was the topic of my last show, so my opinions and everything are in that podcast, so you can go listen to that.
Well, was it, I haven't heard that episode yet. Was it,
it's all positive or negative? It's all very positive, and I just like to add how I guess the twist ending early. Probably about 10 minutes before it actually happened, because I kind of had an idea, but I wasn't positive that's what it was, and then I kind of really knew what it was.
But, it's weird, though, because I never actually saw the twist coming. And it's because of this film, though, for better or for worse. And now, ever since this movie came out, I pretty much have, every time I hear a movie, like, has a twist in it, I'm pretty much constantly trying to figure out throughout the movie what the twist is. And, yeah, it gets annoying. But Sixth Sense, this was actually another one of those great cinema experiences. When I went to see this in the cinema, it was a packed house.
Yeah, me too.
And it was on I think it might have been the first night it premiered in my hometown when my cinema was opened at the time. And I went and saw it.
Like 3 years later.
Yep. But and it was a great experience. Everyone jumped at the right moments. Everyone was taken in by the story and what was going on. And it's funny though, when the actual twist happened, literally you could hear every single person around you go, and it did, like, it was like a, yeah, it was loud, and I was just like, whoa, and I'm like, and...
It's one of the classic oh shit moments of cinema.
Yeah, and I was taken aback by the twist as well, but what I love about this film, it's quite an emotional horror film, and that's some of the horror films I love that are not only, like, scary and creepy and all that, but also have some kind of emotion to it, whether it's, like, with the film has some terrific characters. It has superb performances, like from Haley Joel Osment and Toni Collette, who I still reckon should have both won the Oscars, but what can I say? But didn't happen. But they were both amazing, and Bruce Willis was great.
It was an incredibly well acted movie.
Yeah,
like brilliantly.
Yeah, and very well directed and written by M. Night Shyamalan, and like the. It's just such a great film to watch and such a beautiful film to look at too. It's like, again, it Let the Right One In. Like, it doesn't, it takes the less is more approach. Like, it doesn't like show off like it has some pretty cool camera angles in it and all that, but it's how it looks and everything is so subtle, but it looks so beautiful at the same time. And it just it's just so compelling and very creepy at times as well. And it's just not just a great horror film, but it also works great as a drama as well.
Do you know what I actually really like about this movie is when you watch it again, once you know the twist, you can see how plainly obvious it is. But when you first see it, you can understand how you didn't pick up on it. But I kind of had like a strange feeling about what it was. And then 10 minutes before the reveal, I was positive that's what it was. So when it actually happened, I was more like, oh, I was right. Go me.
I'm probably in the minority for this, but I just didn't gel with me over the fact that there was something about Haley Joel Osment's acting. And I mean, I don't know whether he was the right person to be nominated or not, but it just felt forced, and it came off as annoying in my opinion. It's just, And then, of course, my uncle also spoiled the movie for me before I watched it, and so it's kind of,
yeah.
I kind of had a preconceived notion of the film, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Overall, yeah. I mean, I'll admit that it was clever in a twist, and then I was actually thinking of the Signs, actually, when you had mentioned The Sixth Sense, and it was, I thought that was really well done.
Yeah.
But then we're talking about The Sixth Sense and not Signs.
Yeah.
But even still, I have to agree that it was, the film was well done, and that it kept that sort of twist going until you finally found out, and it's like, oh, it all makes sense now. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
So I have to give it that.
I really like The Sixth Sense. I do got to say, from his movies, from M. Night's movies, I did like Signs, and especially Unbreakable. Like, I fucking love Unbreakable.
I think Unbreakable is my favorite.
It was a very good film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that might be my favorite film of his, Unbreakable, and then this one, and then probably Signs, even though I thought the ending was dumbass.
I still don't think with Signs, I don't think that was a twist ending, personally. Not that, like, he was making a twist ending, it just,
yeah,
it didn't feel like a twist ending. A lot of people think, oh, that's not a good twist ending. Well, I don't think it ever was intended to be a twist ending.
The way he presented it, though, it's like, oh my god, it's like some big reveal, but, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I would say it's more of a reveal.
That didn't have, like, a twist ending, it just kind of had an ending. And that movie, like, definitely has its detractors. And I, watching it, like, when I was done watching Lady in the Water, I said to myself, I liked this movie, but I don't know why. And that still kind of stands to this day.
Yeah. Like, I think with Lady in the Water, like, I don't mind that movie, too. Like I give it, like, a 3, and I can understand why people didn't like it. But I think my main criticism of the film, I think there's too much exposition from characters. Like, they just kept talking. They pretty much explained the entire plot of the movie through dialogue. Like, they could have just, like, done it through, like, you know, little reveals and not explain everything that was going on. But I do love the final shot of that film, which is, like, there's a scene that involves a pool. And it's funny, a lot of my favorite shots involve pools for some reason. Spoilers, have we all seen Lady in the Water?
I haven't seen it. I don't actually intend to see it. I got no interest in seeing it.
Oh, well, there's this final shot involving a pool, and yeah, it was a spectacular shot. I still think that movie, like, I understand why people didn't like it, but I think it was, got too much hate, like, but yeah.
Mm.
But I love Signs, though. I love Signs a lot. It'd be in my top 10 horror films
that,
as well. But
that had some good. It had some good scares in Signs. Like, I, my experience watching it was good, but I just didn't like how it ended. So.
Yeah. I think it really comes down to, like, whether you take that ending or not. But I know a lot of people who like the movie but didn't really care for the ending.
Sorry, I've got a dog barking here. I'm just gonna let him out. What we'll do is we'll move it along to Pat for his number 2. So, bring it on.
Number 2. Yeah. My number 2, actually, I know some people will be like, oh, no. But others will be, you know, they'll say, oh, yeah, I get it. But it's a little 2004 horror film. Directed by one James Wan, and I'm sure that you guys have already figured it out. So you oddities.
Is it Dead Silence?
No, not me at the Dead Silence. No, it's Saw.
Saw,
the one that started the whole torture porn sort of thing. But I mean, for, you know, you have to admit, for its time. You know, for when I came around, and it was so unique again that, and the whole concept of, you know, what James Wan was going for, and then having Lee Wano doing the story as well, and then having just having the twist right at the end again. It was just so, I don't want to say fun, because it obviously wasn't. It was just so sort of, you had to keep watching. It was just the whole sort of, just seeing what happened next and just seeing just it through to its conclusion. And, it was, you know, again, it was unique. And it was gory as hell, but, you know.
Yeah. I'll be the first to admit that I had a lot of fun watching this movie. A lot of fun, but, you know, it was just different and it was gross. And I just really, I didn't know where it was going. And the way that it ended was just, whoa, I can't believe you did that.
What I wouldn't give to be back in 2004 seeing this for the first time and just at the end like, oh, okay, this was average, all good. Like, God, what the fuck? Like, I want that feeling again. It was so awesome because as good as some of the sequels are, that initial shock has just kind of been lost and I miss that.
It was good. Like the first viewing. And you realize everything just comes together. It's like, what the fuck did I just watch?
It was different. Like, I Saw is great. I really like Saw as well, but unfortunately, I got spoiled the ending.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was. Like, I was cruising through, like, Joe Blow, the bloody Joe Blow forums, spoiling me of everything. I went in, just clicking in, and somebody said, I didn't read the whole thing. I just saw one thing, and I was like, no.
Oh, good thing there's spoiler tags now.
Yeah, thank goodness for that. It's not the first time that's happened. It happened to me with The Village. It happened to me with a couple other movies as well. And I thought, damn you all to hell.
Well, there's been times when I've actually just wanted to know what it was because I probably wasn't going to see the movie anyway.
You know what's funny, though? It's like you were saying, Pat, like it started this whole torture porn thing. Like, but when I look back on it now, there wasn't really that many torture scenes in it. It was actually quite straightforward.
No, I mean, I should probably clarify that the sequel Saw 2 just really sort of reveled in the sort of, you know, torturing the victims. And then, of course, you have to thank Darren Lynn Bousmet for that. But for the initial one, just, you know, it was so unique and so sort of, you know, how clever just how we got that, you know, how James Wan came up with this. And of course, you know, just seeing the trailer and the various teasers and seeing Shawnee Smith with the sort of reverse bear trap thing on her face and just.
Well, that was creepy as
how
shit.
How far will you go, sort of?
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
I'll admit, I've only actually seen Saw and Saw 2. I haven't watched past them. It's just not like, it's not something I didn't like or anything. I just, you know, after 2, which I really liked 2 as well, I just thought, where else can they really go with it? And I just wasn't bothered to see the rest.
I'm sure some people have been asking the same question after Saw 3 and just seeing, you know, how much more can you go with this? And it's just, you know, having Saw 7 coming out next October and it's just, you know, how much more can they do with this?
Yeah. Like, I've seen all the movies so far. I haven't seen number 6 yet, so I can't really comment on that one yet. But, you know, I just enjoy seeing the movies anyway. Like, I mean, like, I've liked, like, 2, 3, and 4, but I thought the fifth one, even though it was okay, it was pretty uninspired. Like, it just, like, you know, it felt too lazy for me. At least it, like, with the other ones, at least they tried to attempt something. But of course, with the first one. The first one is still, without a doubt, the best one, and always will be the best one, because, and I think that, and because there's a lot of, but I do like the fact that with the Saw series, like the whole overall series, it's like how all these movies are all connected to each other. It's like you got to go back and you go back and you learn two things. I mean, I would really like to see a whole timeline of this movie series. And it'd just be really interesting to see that. And, like, oh, I just lost my train of thought.
We keep doing that on this show.
Yeah. it's just so interesting on how all these movies are all connected, like, through characters and, like, their histories and...
Yeah,
it's always interesting to learn new things through the series and how, why Jigsaw is doing what he's doing and how all these characters fit into that.
Like, I've read about it, I just haven't really watched it, and, you know, maybe I will, but probably not anytime soon. Maybe next year I'll venture into it. But now that we've got AJ back, hopefully he won't disconnect. I'll hand it over to him for his number two.
All right, my number two pick is just flat out Final Destination, the very first one, not the Final Destination, not two or three, the just original, five. And not and just because. Not just because of, like, the over-the-top sequences, which were awesome, but I just love the concept of death as a horror villain. It just removed away all pretensions of some guy with a chainsaw, with a machete or whatever coming after you, who can be beaten but who will come back in the next movie anyway. This is death. Death, you can't escape him. You can't avoid him. Death is natural, and I just... latched onto this concept so much. Actually, like 3 years ago, I went to this pop culture conference in Indiana and gave a presentation on how death is the perfect horror villain. And it was just so well done in that like traditional like popcorn format, but at the same time, it really made you think. And this sort of just applies to the first movie, because in the sequels, they're obviously just all about gory deaths, weird deaths, and having fun, especially the last one, The Final Destination, which I actually liked because it was just an unabashed love letter to itself. It was just having fun with the whole concept. But the first Final Destination did it first, did it best, and it is just awesome.
Yeah, I love that movie. And I was struggling, like, that was something I was thinking about putting on my list, but it didn't end up making my list, but I love it. I saw it twice at the movies, and I just made everyone watch this movie because I thought it was just so cool. And, the deaths in it are really well done, and the story's really good. Like, it's something that hadn't really been thought of before, and it just worked so well.
Yeah, I just say that I actually agree with AJ and it's death really is the perfect horror villain because, I mean, it's faceless. It's, it's like a juggernaut. It just, can't stop it. It's, you can only delay it for so long, and it's just the perfect villain. And I will say that I liked Final Destination 2 more than Final Destination, but that's only because of the amazing and over-the-top sort of deaths that were in Final Destination 2, but at the same time, Final Destination, some of the deaths, just came out of nowhere.
The bus.
Was
that a spoiler?
What's that?
I said the bus, or was that a spoiler?
character Billy,
Sean William Scott's
character. I mean, just having that, out of nowhere, and it's just, I just like that was a howler for me because I just did not see that coming.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And the element of surprise is always there, and it keeps it up because it does present. Because when you see like these things, these events set in motion, you're like, oh, this person's gonna die this way. That's like, oh, never mind. It's gonna be this way. Yeah. It's like, ah, shit, and it gets me every single time.
Yeah, it's something you can just keep watching again and again as well, because it's just such a good movie.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely fun.
I only saw 1 and 2. I didn't see 3 or 4. So
I really like number 2. Number 2 would probably be my favorite of the sequels.
I love number 2, yep, as well.
The car crash at the beginning is fucking epic.
That's wickedly awesome.
But one of the things I really like about Final Destination is that with the sequels, they kind of focused more on, like, you know, all the cool deaths, all the gore and all that. But I did like the fact that they worked a bit more with the characters in the first film. Like, I mean, all the actors did a pretty good job, even though some of them were playing against, you know, typical horror stereotypes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Devon Sawa, Ali Larter, they were both very good in their roles, and everybody was really good. I don't think there was a bad performance in the movie, really.
Oh, and Kerr Smith was a bit hit and miss.
Which one?
Kerr Smith, the guy that used to be in Dawson's Creek.
Oh, yeah. I think he was a bit too old for that role, because he was on the verge of 30 by then.
Yeah.
But I definitely really loved Tony Todd's appearance.
Oh, he didn't love that.
Oh yeah, Tony Todd, and of course his appearance in Final Destination 2, and even in the deleted scenes from Final Destination 2, just the whole nipple ring thing, just, you know, I'll leave it at that. It was just so, I mean, Tony Todd is just wow. Again, you know, like you said, the character-wise, you know, it's just, they really explored them in this one, whereas in the following sequels is like, okay, what sort of horrible thing can we do to this person? And, you know, it was just, from then on, it was just about, you know, okay, we just want to see these guys get it. And,
like, it's interesting, because I think James Wong did a great job directing the film. Like, I mean, the plane, like, when the plane crash scene was just absolutely frightening to me, because I wouldn't say I have a fear of flying, but I just get nervous when I'm on planes.
I had one after that, but I got over it.
Yeah, well, just imagine me, like, because I had to do 8 flights throughout my entire trip away, and so let's just say it was a most enjoyable experience,
it was like right after I'd seen this movie twice at the cinema, I had to go on a plane and I was so shit scared.
I just really like how it also has a really good it has a great kind of atmosphere to it, and but since then James Wong hasn't really, you know, done, like, hasn't really made anything as good as Final Destination. I mean, the one was fun. It was okay. Even when he and Glenn Morgan came back for the third one, even though that one was okay as well, but it felt like they were, like, instead of just doing what they did on the first film, they were just, like, again, just concerned just making, you know, cool deaths and just, like, without us caring much for the characters. Except for Mary Elizabeth Winstead, because I love her. But anyway, but I just really like the first film. It, like, again, it was, had such a great premise, and it was one that you've never seen in a horror film before. And having death as a villain was pretty awesome.
Mm.
And yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about it. It was just a great, just a really great, entertaining. Yeah. And very, at the time, original horror film.
Yeah, it was good, for sure. Like, it was a standout of that year, as far as movies in general. And it's funny, like, my dad doesn't really like horror movies, but he really loved this movie, and he wanted to, like, watch it again and again, which is funny. Like, he's just not, I mean, if you knew him, you know, he's not the type that you would expect to like this movie. So it's definitely got a broader appeal, I'd say. I'll move right along and I'll name my number 2. I've gone with, this is again, just in general, it's one of my favourite movies, and that would be May. And have you guys seen May?
Yes.
No, I haven't, unfortunately, but I know of it.
You need to see it now.
Yeah, May's a great film.
I absolutely just love this movie. And seeing as you haven't seen it, I don't really want to be spoiling it, but... It's just, it's just such like a unique movie, and the character itself, she's just so sad, and you feel sorry for her, and you just want to give her a hug. She's misunderstood, she's awkward, she doesn't know what she's doing. Like, you know, she's kind of been sheltered, and she was an outcast, and her only friend has been a doll, and a cuff. Totally forgot what the doll was called now. It escapes me the name, but she's only had this doll, and, you know, when she tries to kind of get out in the world, everything's really awkward, and, you know, she's got a crush on this guy, and things kind of don't really, you know, they're not going to work out because of just how weird she is. And then she starts getting involved with the girl she works with, and, you know, that's probably going to end badly as well. And I mean, it's quite complex. It's, you know, there's psychological elements there, and it does get quite a bit gory at times as well. But I just thought everything just was so great about it. Like, the directing is great, the look of the film is great, the acting is great. It's just an awesome movie, and I've seen it many, many times. And that's my rant about May.
May is awesome, and I hope Lucky McGee comes back in the style that he did, came out with May, because I love May, and then he did my favorite episode of the first season of Masters of Horror, Sick Girl, which is just this dementedly disgusting and awesome thing. And then came The Woods, which was bland as all hell. The Woods was just so disappointing.
I liked The Woods.
I didn't mind The Woods as well, but I do definitely agree with Adam. Like, him and Angela Bettis, who is absolutely amazing in this film.
Oh, she is.
Yeah, and again with Ginger Snaps, they haven't really done much since then, and I hope that both Lucky McKay and Angela Bettis somewhat make a bit of a comeback in some way, because Lucky McKay is a very talented director, and he has a great eye for visuals and how to tell a story, and he's just great with characters.
Yeah.
I kind of miss that, and like, he hasn't really been doing much, pretty much, like, like his Master of Horror episodes, Sick Girl, and also The Woods, and he hasn't done anything since then.
Yeah, and Angela,
I think Madison, he like co-directed this one called Red. I think he co-directed, or at least like he directed, then got replaced or something, I want to say.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, but. Well, I don't count Red, because I haven't seen it, but I don't count because, you know, like, he made half of it and then got fired and was replaced by somebody else, so.
Gotta love when that happens.
But I think it's interesting that he still got credited on the movie, even though he got fired, and I just found that very interesting, which usually doesn't happen a lot when somebody gets fired on a set and is replaced. But May is it's not scary, but it's definitely a very chilling and disturbing film.
It is quite disturbing in a way as well. Yeah. But the ending is it's sad as well.
It's a beautifully sad ending.
Yeah, but, yeah, Angela Bettis is amazing in it. And it's got Jeremy Sisto, who I love, and he's great in it. He's like, his character's like this Argento fanboy type. And
I think his performance is very underrated in that movie.
He's got, his character has this really cool, like, cannibal movie, which it's definitely a highlight of the movie. it's funny and weird, and I think it was like an early movie for Anna Faris as well. And she's quite good in it. Like, she's just perfect, like, the perfectly suited to play the character she does.
Yeah, she's great as well.
But, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's one of my, like, all-time favourite movies, and, yeah, definitely one of the better horror movies to come out in the last 10 years, so.
Yeah.
That is my number two. So we're down to the big ones. Number one, I could change the order around, which I might do, and I'll just keep talking, and I'll go with my number one.
Yep.
So my number one, which is, again, this is one of my all-time favorite movies, and I have kind of talked about it a little bit on past shows, and that movie would be Frailty, and you all better have seen it.
Yes.
Yes.
Really fantastic.
I have it. I'm deprived. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. Pat's going to have some bloody podcasting homework to do.
That's it, Pat. You're out of this podcast.
I know I am.
But that's okay, because a lot of people, I say Frailty, and they go, what the fuck's a Frailty? Go fuck yourself.
Where's Bill Paxton?
Yeah, this is
Bill. Did you get out of the dictionary?
Yeah, this is Bill Paxton directing as well as being in the movie. And it stars Matthew McConaughey in a film where he can actually act really well. He's quite good.
And has
it.
His shirt on.
Yeah, I think there might be one scene he has his shirt off, and that's about it. This is
and he does shit eating grin on his face.
Yeah. This is one I've actually saw twice at the movies, and I saw it for free both times because I had free tickets galore. yeah, this is just, I mean, overall, it's just a fucking fantastic movie. And it's got such a weird storyline, and then you watch it unfold, and it just, you're just not sure what is going on, and it really fucks with your head, and it's got these weird religious elements in it, and I just thought everything about it just was fantastic, and Bill Paxton, this is like one of his best roles. He's just awesome in it. Just amazing, like, just everything about this movie I love so much.
It's a very complex film.
It is.
Like, you just, you, like, look back on it, like after when it's finished, you look back on just how everything all fits together.
Yeah, it all does,
And, like, there's so many twists and turns within the story, and it's and you just kind of piece it all together, and it comes up with some really thought-provoking ideas, and...
Yeah.
Everybody's great in the movie.
Yeah, it's done such, like, it's done in an interesting way. And again, like, it's got the two young kids in it are actually really good as well.
Mm.
And, you know, I was impressed, you know, by them. When I saw this movie, I was just so blown away. I really had to see it again, and I was lucky that I had free tickets again. So it was definitely, like, it's not a conventional movie to see at the cinema, but I enjoyed seeing it at the cinema twice. Yeah.
It's definitely a film I really want to see again because I've only ever seen it once.
I need to see it again, and I can't find my copy, and I'm really pissed off. I'm probably just going to have to like get it off eBay again or something.
Yeah, I really want to see it again.
But, yeah.
You guys have said it all. It's an impressive movie, and at the video store I work at, whenever anyone says, what's the scary movie, I point to Frailty first.
Yeah. It's something I always tell people they've got to watch, and everyone I've shown it to has liked it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, like, when you actually first start watching it and some of the things you're seeing in this movie, you're thinking, fuck, this guy's, like, got mental issues. And it just really fucks with your head. Like, you know, you think this guy's, like, a religious fanatic or something, and then there's just so much more to it. It's great. Definitely my, you know, my number one for the past 10 years. And it's not my favourite horror movie ever, but it's definitely, you know, it is very high on that list as well as my overall movies of all time. So
it's definitely a film I think a lot of people have forgotten about this past decade, but it's definitely one that everyone should go check out.
Definitely.
Yes, especially you, Pat.
Yeah. Seeing as Pat hasn't seen it, I'll pass it over to him for his number one.
Alrighty. This one, I didn't want to put this in any sort of order, you know, like, you know, best to ultimate film that you must have to see and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But also, I know that some people are going to be, you know, screaming and saying, why'd you choose that film? Because for one thing, it's a remake.
No.
Not a remake.
Kill.
But you know what? I know, but you know what? It was just, the thing was that I was just comparing it to the original. I mean, in context, it was just so, I don't know, it was very well done, considering the fact that Marcus Nispel had only done, up until that point, music videos. Of course, I'm talking about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
See, I like the remake.
And of course, everyone's like, awkward silence. But no, I mean, it was just, and for the fact that, you know, people made a big deal about, you know, the fact that Michael Bay was producing it, and it was like, oh, it's going to be a Michael Bay film. It's like, no, it's going to be a Marcus Nispel film. And for him, just, it was, that film was just, I don't know whether it started the whole sort of, you know, sepia tone, sort of gritty looking horror films that we see now. But I mean, just then it was just, you really could see it was very gritty, very dirty sort of
film. It's got a dirty, grimy feel to it. And I thought that kind of captured the feel of the original in that way, because the original is very dirty and gross as well.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, at the same time, the original still had this sort of, it was still sort of sunny, ready to start driving down the road, you know. Whereas with this one, you could actually see, you know, it took all the color out, and just it was that sort of look to it that it helped made it so much fun. And then of course you get Andrew Bronowski as Leatherface, and you know, I mean, having Gunnar Hansen as the original Leatherface, I mean, that's classic. But I mean, just having Andrew Bronowski as interpreting Leatherface as his own, just making it, you know, just hell with that.
Actually, the best thing about this movie was Jessica Biel in her perfectly placed clothing.
Stuff is just, well, classic.
I really like Ali Erby. I thought he was great in that movie, even though he was playing the same character as he does in every film. But he's always awesome. Plays it so well.
Yeah.
He's awesome doing his taxes. Ali Erby doesn't have to try.
Yeah. But, you know, I enjoyed this movie. Like, I don't say that I like, I'm not afraid to admit that I liked it, and, you know, I thought there was good things about it. There was things they tried, you know, they changed, and I thought it worked for that movie, like the hitchhiker thing, and, you know, some of the deaths were pretty brutal as well. But I just, you know, I thought everyone actually gelled pretty well, and for me, like, it worked for the most part. And I don't really have a problem with Marcus Nispel as a director.
No, I mean, you know, I mean, some people gave him, you know, a lot of flack for just basically copying and what he did in Texas Chainsaw Massacre for the Friday the 13th remake. But I mean, this was just, and I do have to give credit to New Line for the fantastic DVD that they made, the two-disc version with the hour-long documentary on it. It just went through really everything. Good. And you'd see just what went into it, and just how much work that went into it. And just, it actually went over the fact that, you know, people were just, you know, adamant to the fact that, oh, no, Michael Bay, evil, bad, you know, this is good stuff. And I mean, like, some people just couldn't get over that fact. And, you know, I mean, if you get past the fact that Michael Bay was associated with the film, and just look at it as a whole, you know, it, for itself, it's a really nice sort of, I don't want to say remake, but that's what it was. I mean, it was fun, too. I mean, just to deal wearing those tight pants and everything, but, you know.
Yeah.
Always constantly wet.
I gotta say, I thought the movie was okay. It wasn't the worst, it wasn't the best, but I have to give credit to the trailer. Because the trailer
was
one of the best horror trailers of the decade, easily.
Yeah,
I guess.
Definitely.
I agree.
Yeah, it was
When I heard the idea of Chainsaw Massacre remake, I'm like, oh crap, how's this gonna turn out? When I saw the trailer, I had hope. I had hope, and I gotta give that credit to that.
No, I have to agree with you on that, AJ, because, like, I saw the trailer, and I swear, like, not since the original Alien trailer, trailer for Alien, had I been that, you know, freaked out, because it was just something about it that was just, you know, so, And, I mean, even with the original teaser trailer, the Google Play trailer, that you see on the DVD, actually, that he used to sort of get attention for the film. I mean, that even it goes for the whole, you know, you don't see anything. It's just, you know, just someone running around in the theater screaming. And then, of course, you hear Leatherface, and then you hear the revving of the chainsaw, and then that's that. I mean, like, and of course, they got flack for that because of, like, sort of violence. But, I mean, there's nothing to it. It was just sound.
Yeah.
And even that was just amazing in itself.
Yeah.
Actually, if you're interested in, like, real serial killer stuff, the DVD, the 2-disc DVD's got a really cool little doco on Ed Gein, which was pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
There's also that as well.
I got that 2-disc edition of
the
TCM remake as well, and it is a great disc. And also, like when we were talking about Freddy versus Jason earlier, also the DVD for that was also great as well, and that was a 2-disc as well.
Mm.
A lot of great stuff on that one as well.
Mm. Yeah, something we actually got in Australia. For once.
It drives me nuts that people still think that this actually happened. It's like, no, it's inspired. And, you know, people can't figure it out. It's like Ed Gein, yes, he was off his rocker. Yes, he made, like, he skinned human bodies and made furniture out of them. But, I mean, and he wore skins and everything like that. But, I mean, that's as far as it went.
Yeah.
Really.
It's amazing how far things like this actually go. We'll move right along to AJ, who better not cut out, because that would suck. So, what is your number one pick?
My number one pick is one that was discussed earlier, and that is the Blair Witch Project.
Yes.
I just have to say it's also my number one pick as well.
Well, what we'll do is we'll hand it over to both of you, and because you didn't chime in before, because myself and Pat were talking about it, I'll hand it over to you guys to let us know what you know, it's your number one, so
I'll let AJ go first.
About it. Yeah.
Awesome.
Don't cut out. Is he gone? He's gone. He's still there.
No.
He's still there, but there's no sound.
Might have to disconnect and come back on.
Yeah. Has he sent us a message?
No. He probably will in a sec.
Maybe. Well, he's gone, so I'll just, like, pause it. All right. Go.
Am I good?
Yeah, go.
All right. Yeah, in fear of being disconnected...
In fear, or you were getting disconnected? Is he gone?
Gone again.
I'll just let it record, not edit it out. I can't be bothered unpausing it.
Comedy of errors.
I'll hand it over to you again. Hopefully you won't disconnect. Unless you have already. No. Alright, go.
All right, Blair Witch Project, awesome movie. Go see it. Boom, I'm done.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that was it. Okay.
Yeah, that was
lead off you.
Okay. All right. Okay, Blair Witch Project. Yeah, it's probably not only is one of my favorite horror films of this past decade, but it's also my number one horror film of all time. Not number one, number four, sorry. You can edit that out. but Blair Witch Project, it was pretty much, I think I pretty much, when I first heard about the film, it was, again, from the internet. And at the time, I was those unfortunate few that actually thought it was real.
No! Sucker.
I was young. So, well, I didn't last for too long. I thought, okay, missing kids, okay. Like, reading up, this has got to be real. And then it wasn't before, I don't know whether it was before the movie came out or after I saw it that I realized, oh, it's fake. But it didn't really bother me too much that it was fake because it was such a well-crafted and really creepy horror film. And that just kept me on the edge of my seat. I just pretty much, and again, it's the less is more approach. I mean, and you never see the witch, you never see any of the creepy stuff that happens throughout the movie. And I kept being interrupted by my family, but anyway, sorry. it's definitely the less is more approach. I mean, you never see the witch, you never see anything, like the one scene in particular, like where they're hiding out in the tent and they hear all those kids laughing. And that really just sent chills down my spine. And I just really immersed myself in the whole, like I read all the books about it, know the history, and it just really enthralled me. And yeah, and all the three leads were fantastic. And the ending is just one of the most scariest things I've ever seen. And
yeah, the ending is fucking, it's phenomenal. Like, I wasn't scared throughout this movie, to be perfectly honest, but the ending was really creepy.
Yeah, and it's so simple too. It's such a simple but very effective ending. And it's one of those movies, like, I saw it in the cinema, and even like to this day, whenever I still watch it, it still creeps me out. And that's when you know a horror film works, is when every time you see it, it still just creeps the fuck out of you. And I just absolutely love The Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
And like, if people out there don't like it, well then, you know, whatever. But
I don't know. I think it's just very, you know, creepy that the fact that the leads didn't even know what the hell was going on. I mean, Daniel Myrick and Sanchez, you know, purposely, you know, limited their ration, their food, you know, would purposely go around and just screw with them. And it's just that sort of, it brought out basically just what their, brought out the fear factor. And it was just, that was, I don't know, in hindsight, it seems kind of mean and everything like that. But I mean, it's like, well, when you hear about other stories, like with other horror movies that have gone on to get that directors have done to get emotion and everything from their actors. I mean, it's not that big of a deal.
it's not like the stuff they did in this film was nothing compared to what they were doing on The Exorcist, that's for sure.
Exactly, I was thinking the exact same thing.
And yeah, it's just really I honestly thought that Heather Donahue was going to be like the huge breakout star of this film. Like, I thought she was fantastic in the film.
I found her so annoying. When she's crying in the camera, I just want to smash her head in.
Like, sorry. I can see why people find her annoying, but honestly, like, but
I'm not saying she didn't give a good performance or anything, but I just found her annoying, that's all.
Yeah. I mean, when you're sort of in a constant state of fear all the time, like, you know, when you're not scared yourself, you just really would want to slap somebody, just, like, snap out of it, you know? Like, you know, just make them come to their senses, but Yeah, I was honestly shocked that that she got a Razzie nomination, to be honest. I don't know. For worst actress, and also the film was nominated for worst picture as well, it's probably the best reviewed film to ever be nominated for a Razzie. I mean, for worst picture. Like, it has like an 80% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I don't know, but The Blair Witch Project is just a film that is very polarizing. You either really, really love it, or you really, really hate it.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I loved it.
Yeah, it's.
Oh, I thought it was like, you know, it was like a really good movie. I just wasn't scared. that was the only thing for me. Yeah.
It still creeps
me. Which sort of begs the question of like, what's more important? Like, what's like between the best horror movie and the scariest movie? Because depending on who you ask, those are two really different things.
Yeah. Mm.
I just enjoyed it for what it was. You know, like, it was weird because everyone afterwards was like, oh, I was so scared, and I'm like, yeah, I wasn't that scared, and then I'm like...
It's the same thing that hit Paranormal Activity. There's all this build-up and hype of how creepy it was, but then it got way out of line.
Mm.
People around here, around my area, were like, oh, here's the scariest movie ever. It's like, no, you won't shit your pants. It's an awesome movie. But it's not the scariest thing ever.
But, like, the funny thing was that, that night, I'd basically started hearing the weird sounds that they were hearing. But I just thought, yeah, this is so typical. Mm-hmm. It's in my head because I've seen this movie and I just so didn't let it get to me. And I was just like, this is so typical of, like, you know, something. It's going to stick with you even if, you know, you didn't find it scary, and I just thought it was funny at the time. So, yeah, I mean, it was a good experience anyway. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. It's still, like, this and The Exorcist are still probably the two scariest films I've ever seen. Like, I rewatched The Exorcist a while ago, and, like, it didn't scare me as much as it did the first time I seen it, but I saw it when I saw it the first time, it just absolutely freaked me out big time.
Mm. It's good when a movie can actually do that.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then I remember the Ring remake did that for me, and I was like, but also, I didn't see it in theaters, I saw it at home, but I saw it with the lights off and everything like that, with the surround on, and it was just, you know, freaking me out from that. But it's all about where you see it and where you see it. Because, I mean, you know, you wouldn't watch, say, Gremlins in the middle of summer. Well, I don't know. What would you guys, but...
I would.
yeah, I know. watching John Carpenter's The Thing, when it's like 40 degrees out, you know, that sort of thing. You know, it's all sort of, you know, wear and wear.
Yeah, it's the same with a lot of horror films. Like, probably some of the scariest, like The Blair Witch Project, like I saw in the cinemas and definitely scared the shit out of me, but definitely like a lot of the scarier ones I've seen, I actually seen them like in my own home, in my own room, just by myself, and just experiencing that.
Mm.
And it's not the same when if somebody's in there with you, like you're with like one of your friends or a family member, and you're watching this movie, like you might get creeped out, but there's just something about just watching it on your own, like in the middle of the night with all the lights off, and it just adds an extra dimension to the proceedings of while you're watching the film.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can definitely understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, I think that's probably a wrap for our epic show.
Very epic.
We've discussed quite a few movies, and obviously one has come up again. because obviously we were probably going to have similar picks anyway. But, yeah, it was really good to have a really good discussion about different movies. And, you know, sometimes we agreed, sometimes we disagreed, and sometimes we hadn't seen the movie. But it's always fun. Like, it's good to, you know, just shoot the shit about this kind of stuff. So hopefully the listening audience enjoys. And if not, we're going to come after you, or we'll send death after you, because that's pretty creepy.
I'll give them pads at us.
Yeah, right.
We'll send Beatrice Dally knocking at their door.
I was going to say, you can send all hate mail to the guests. Send all your hate mail to the three guests, and you can send me all your awesome naked photos to me.
Bring it on.
Yeah. I'm kidding.
I want naked photos, though.
I only want really good naked photos. If you got bad ones, send them to the guests. with that, I'll thank you three for joining me despite some technical issues that we've had.
AJ.
But no, it was a lot of fun, and I hope you guys had fun.
Awesome time.
Good.
I always have a fun time being on these podcasts, Marty. I can't wait to do another one.
Yes, well, you're all welcome back, and AJ should find a really steady internet connection.
I really should. This is awful.
It's been fun. Anyone listening, we've had like over an hour of pre-show, so we've been talking for quite a while. So yeah.
Adam and I are probably exhausted by now, because it's 1:45 in the morning for me. I don't know about Adam, but
I'm an hour ahead of you.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, jeez.
Actually, no, it's an hour back. It's 12:48 here.
Oh, that's all right.
That's not so bad. And for me and the terrible one, it's like dinner time, so.
Yeah, it's about nearly 6 o'clock on my end.
Yeah, and unfortunately we can't, like, give these guys winning lotto numbers or anything, even though we're in the future, so that kind of sucks. But,
in the year 2000.
But, yeah, again, thanks for joining me. And, yeah, until next time, I'm super awesome and you guys are pretty cool as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marcy.